This is the Stock Day Podcast, sponsored by InvestorsHangout.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes and YouTube to stay up to date on penny stock news and interviews. Public information on OTC, pink sheets, and microcap stocks from around the world. Here's your host, Everett Jolly.
On today's show, I'm bringing actually a new guest that I'm super excited to have him on the show. The name of the company is Graphiton, and they're actually a part of subsidiary of U.S. Nuclear, ticker symbol UCLE. And with us today is the CEO of Graphiton, going to bring us up to speed, what they're doing, some of the exciting things that they're doing with the electrode technology. And his name is Sam Kassung. Sam, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
You know, before we get started on the Q&A, give my listeners just a little bit of backstory of who you guys are and what you're trying to accomplish down there in San Diego.
So the name of the company, as you mentioned, is called Graphiton. It came out of a research that was funded by the U.S. National Science Foundation as an engineering research center. It's called Center for Neurotechnology. And it's a center that's run together with University of Washington in Seattle and MIT together with SDSU. And I've been involved in this project for 10 years. And the funding was actually to expand the realm of what we call brain-computer interface. So we've been funded for 10 years. And our technology came out of this work at the center. We knew we had an interesting technology, which was getting acceptance in the research environment, and that we wanted it to bring it to the market. So that's the background of Graphiton.
U.S. Nuclear has a rare opportunity. They bought 40% of your guys' neuroscience, a company that's a startup down there in San Diego. That being said, what is the unique thing about Graphiton's electrode technology as opposed to those that are in your space?
So what's unique about Graphiton's core technology is the electrode technology. Now, what I mean by that is the material that the electrode is made is of carbon nature. Now, in the competition, both in the research environment and in the commercial space, pretty much all the electrode materials are made up of what we call thin films. So either you have platinum or iridium oxide. These thin films are very granular in structure. They, under a microscope, they look like grains of sand. Now, the problem with that is if you want to keep them in the body for a very long period of time, and particularly if you're going to apply some kind of electrical stimulation, then this granular structures actually corrode, and they don't last long. Whereas our material is very smooth, homogeneous, and in fact, the name is glassy carbon. It's carbon, which is very shiny, and homogeneous material, and we have demonstrated that it will last for a very long period of time. In a laboratory condition, we've shown that it could last up to, well, in our accelerated aging, we have shown that it could last up to 10 years without anything happening. So imagine putting this electrode in somebody's brain and you don't have to take it. It's going to stay for a very long period of time without corrosion. So that's the core of our technology.
And what are you guys looking to accomplish through this process?
So as you know, this new field of brain-computer interface has many aspects, but mainly two. The first one is fundamental understanding, right? So we want to understand how the brain works so that we have a better understanding of disease states. The second one is, of course, in therapeutic applications. A growing number of applications are coming online where such electrodes or probes are being put in the brain, and we're not only recording the signals from the brain, but we're also stimulating the brain. For example, I'll give you a number. There are about 190 to 200,000 people around the globe where such BCI electrodes are implanted in their brain for a variety of reasons, particularly treating, for example, Parkinson's disease and very chronic depressions, which are not treatable by drugs and so on. So therapeutics as well as fundamental understanding are the two key components.
And where do you see this technology in the next 5 or 10 years?
So we're just entering this revolution. And in fact, if you look at the media, here and there you hear about newer companies, some of them established by serial entrepreneurs, looking at this revolution. So what we're seeing is, first of all, there are about 1 billion people around the world with some kind of neurodegenerative disease. Now, not all of them need such kind of intervention. They could be treated with drugs and so on. But there are some cases which are not treatable with drugs. You know, for example, there are some types of epilepsy, some cases of Parkinson's disease, which are not treatable by drugs, and patients continue to suffer. So we found out, the community has found out, the research community, that interfacing the brain with this kind of hardware will actually offer therapeutic solutions. We are seeing a number of diseased states, essential tremor, Parkinson's, epilepsy, and so on, being treated by such hardware, brain-computer interface. And in that space, what's happening right now is the number of channels. So imagine, so you have these devices, and they have a number of channels. And what we call the channels are the electrodes, which record signals and which also stimulate. So if you want to treat a larger area, or if you want to get very clear message, if you want to read brain signals very clearly, then you have to increase the number of channels. So increasing the number of channels is one thing. On the other hand, there is something that we call multimodality. The brain is a very complicated and fascinating organ. It communicates through electrical signals, but it also communicates through chemical signals. So if you have a device which records not only the electrical signals, but the electrochemical signals, which are the which is reading actually the brain chemistry, then you have a better understanding of the brain. And if you have, for example, a deep brain stimulation, if you have a feedback loop where you stimulate the brain, but you're also recording the level, the chemistry in the brain, then the treatment that you apply is more controlled, more accurate, and the efficacy increases. That's where we see the direction, multimodality, together with the increase in the number of channels of this probes.
Well, let me ask you this. What little I know about what you guys are doing out there and under my study, do you guys integrate neuroethics concepts in the design of your natural probes? And what are some of the neuroethics issues that your company considers in its engineering process?
Yes, like I pointed out, the origins of Graphitone is the center called Center for Neurotechnology. It's a 10-year-funded center. The uniqueness about this particular center was the integration of neuroethics in the design of these devices, as well as the experiments and the therapeutic procedures. Now, we have benefited from the findings and the great minds of philosophers who have worked with us, where we have found out that integrating neuroethics at the design level, from the design, starting from the design level, is important, because we're entering a new realm where there are a number of ethical issues, legal issues, and social issues. And I'll give you some examples of what I mean by this. For example, a person who has a DBS, which is a deep brain stimulation electrode implanted in them, what are some of the concerns? You know, one of them is, for example, data security. The other was privacy. And there are other issues called agency and autonomy. And I'll explain this. This particular person who has this, they don't want the signals that is being read from their brain or the stimulation that's being applied to the brain to be unsecure. So you want that to be secure. So whether you're using high-end encryption, very innovative encryption methods and so on, you have to design the probes in such a way that it's foolproof in terms of data security. It cannot be breached, because you're giving access to somebody to interfere with the activities of somebody else's brain. So these are issues that neuroethicists have been worried about for some time, and we were fortunate to grow in that ecosystem, and we integrate that starting from the design stage. Now, the other one is, of course, privacy. And there are things called, for example, agency. So if somebody is using a device, they have an intent to do something with the device. For example, somebody who's paralyzed and there is a brain-computer interface implanted in them and they're able to move robotic arms. So there is that sense of agency. When the person thinks about moving, then the robotic arms moves. And the person has to feel that robotic arm to be an extension of themselves. In the meantime, also, they don't want any of these devices to control them. They want a sense of autonomy. So if they don't want to use that, they should have the ability to switch them off. So we include these kind of considerations in our design, and we really think unless this is done, that's one of the challenges that the new brain-computer interface field will face down the line. So we're very fortunate that we're considering this at the early stage, and our devices are designed and built in that way.
Sam, real quick, because we only got 40 seconds left in the show. One, do you have any customers yet? I know you guys are really big into military, and being in San Diego, you're pretty close to Camp Pendleton. There's a big, you know, Navy base there in San Diego. Give my listeners just a little bit of who would be using your products or who are using your products.
So currently, the majority of our customers are university and research community. So whenever they want to use innovative ways in terms of understanding the brain or in terms of treating some diseases, we provide them custom-built brain-computer interfaces. We're also entering commercial space where we have both the wearable and the invasive ones. For the wearable, there is a lot of interest from the Air Force, the Navy, and in general, the military. So we're working on wearable devices, which are not really invasive, but working from the outside. But they will tell us a lot about the mental readiness of soldiers and so on. So we will have these products addressing the military's needs, but currently university and research community is our heavy user.
Sam, I want to thank you for coming on the show. Our guest today has been Sam Kasing. He is the CEO of Graphiton. They're a part of the subsidiary of U.S. Nuclear. U.S. Nuclear owns approximately 40% of Graphiton down there in San Diego. I'm really excited to have you on the show, and I want to learn more. Hopefully you'll come back in 30 or 40 days and give us an update, especially on the wearables that you might be filtrating that into the different military branches.
Oh, definitely, and thank you very much for having me, and I look forward to another opportunity to chat with you and your listeners.
This program is entirely sponsored and produced by La Jolla Media LLC, which is responsible for the content. The opinions and information provided on this program are for educational and research purposes. Stock Day encourages all listeners of this program to do their due diligence and research when determining investment strategies that will work for them or to seek the assistance of an investment professional.